Fired Up show starts right now.
And welcome, everybody. Welcome to Fired Up. This is Steve. Have you missed me? I apologize for the erratic schedule that I've had with my shows over the last few weeks. My daytime job added some more responsibilities, which meant I had to change hours of operation and so on and so forth. So I haven't been as free to do my shows as I would have liked to have been. And for that, I do apologize. But we're here now. This is Fired Up. We're on WJMS Media, and I'm happy to be back in front of you on the mic. We've had a busy few weeks. We're going to recap some of what's gone on. But first things first, shout out to a little personal indulgence here, people. Shout out to my father, who celebrated his 101st birthday earlier this month. Still blessed to have him in my life. So it's been an interesting few weeks as we have ramped up toward the first of the former president, Donald Trump, the first of his criminal cases. By the way, I'm recording this show on Monday the 22nd, which is the first day of the election interference hush money case, the one that involves Donald Trump and his allies paying $130,000 to adult film star Stormy Daniels and $150,000 to Playboy model Karen McDougal. Additionally, this trial will focus on the so-called catch-and-kill procedure that was being followed by the National Enquirer, where they would squash stories that portrayed Donald Trump in a negative light and advance stories that portrayed him in a positive light. All of this was an attempt to keep information from the voters prior to the 2016 election. If you recall, in fairly quick order, we had a payment announced to Karen McDougal, then the infamous tape recording where Donald Trump described his alleged sexual assaults on women and, you know, grabbing them by their genitals and, you know, all of that stuff. Well, the upshot of all of these things drove his political handlers at the time to, you know, to pay this money to these women to basically hush their stories so that they wouldn't come out and basically torpedo his presidential campaign a few weeks before the election was going to occur. So that trial is now beginning, and it is looking like it is going to include some really detailed information on the arrangement that Donald Trump had with the National Enquirer about killing stories that portrayed him in a negative light, as well as the process and payments and all of the things orbiting around his payoff to these two women in order for them to keep their stories silent. So far, from what I've heard in reporting from day one, it looks like this is going to be a supremely interesting case to hear played out in court. Now, that raises the question of what is the impact this case could have, as it is likely to be the only one of the four cases that he presently faces. Well, he faces more than four, but the four primary cases that he presently faces, This one may be the only one where we actually get to a conclusion and a verdict prior to the November election. Although news reports coming out are saying how later on this week, the Supreme Court is going to be hearing oral arguments on the former president's claim of presidential immunity. And there is another case going on in New York City where the attorney general is questioning the payment of the bond that was put up for the judgment that he faced in his corruption trial. If you recall, it was originally set at something in the tune of $435 million. And a few weeks ago, maybe about a month ago, it was reduced by an appellate court down to $175 million. Well, Donald Trump and his team scrambled around to, you know, to raise this bond money, and they identified a company out of California who agreed to post the $175 million bond. Now, the wrinkle in that story is, unfortunately, they are not licensed to do business in the state of New York, and as news reports come out, there are serious questions about whether this company has enough assets to actually make good on the bond should that be necessary. So that case is being heard in another courtroom in New York City while the election interference case is being heard as well. So, you know, the Donald Trump drama has started in earnest. And we will see what transpires with the cases as more information comes out. I'm going to start gathering the daily transcripts so that I can, you know, give you some summaries of what's going on with those cases, just in case you aren't paying attention. A few other headlines in the news over the last couple of weeks. If I say the words white Bronco, slow speed chase, if the gloves don't fit, what does that bring to mind? And if you have been around for a little while, you know, you're of a certain age, you'll remember that all of these are elements of the original case against O.J. Simpson. Well, we learned this past week that O.J. Simpson died at the age of 76, and you know, this has brought curiosity and information seekers around to dig into what the story of O.J. Simpson was, from, you know, Heisman Trophy winner, football star with the Buffalo Bills, actor, athlete, sportscaster, and ultimately suspicion of double homicide, and serving a jail term for armed robbery. Interesting career, interesting story. I'm sure that there'll be another movie about it, but you know, so the passing of O.J. Simpson occurred this past week. And, you know, it's also just this past weekend, the big news that came out was that the House of Representatives, the U.S. House of Representatives, passed four funding bills, $61 billion for aid to Ukraine, $19 billion for aid to Israel, another $9 billion in humanitarian aid for the Palestinians in Gaza, and another $9 million or so for aid to our allies in the Indo-Pacific region of the world. So after much haranguing and threats and a marker put in place by Marjorie Taylor Greene that she was going to pull the vacate the seat card on Speaker Johnson, that measure has passed. Speaker Johnson had to reach out to the Democrats, but it overwhelmingly passed in a bipartisan fashion with something like 318 votes in favor of it. So now the bill goes to the Senate. It's expected that the Senate will approve it, and it will go on to President Biden for his signature, and aid will begin again to flow to the Ukrainian people and to Israel and to the people suffering in Gaza with the Israel Hamas war going on and so forth. So, you know, again, a lot of up and down news. One thing I do want to talk about, and we're going to cover a little bit here in this segment, is this new threat by the Freedom Caucus Party, the ultra-conservative wing of the Republican Party, particularly Marjorie Taylor Greene and a couple of other congressmen who have stepped up with her and have levied the threat of calling to vacate the chair of the Speaker of the House. Now, from what I'm hearing from conservative and moderate Republicans, is this is not something that they want to go through. They are very upset with their ultra-conservative wing because the memories of, you know, the 3 weeks of dysfunction that occurred when the prior speaker, McCarthy, was ousted. And, you know, this close to the election, the Republican political machine is saying that this is a really bad look. We really don't want to go through this drama just ahead of elections coming up in November. And they're wise to think that. You know, for you know, 3 weeks or a little bit more, nothing got done in government. Nothing got done. They couldn't vote on any appropriations. They couldn't vote on any aid. They couldn't vote on anything because the House did not have a speaker. And, you know, this is not something that, you know, we want to see, and it's not something that the majority of at least moderate Republicans or non-aligned Republicans want to see. They don't want to see the kind of energy, time, and resources wasted that happened when the Freedom Caucus ousted former Speaker McCarthy. And, you know, there have been some interesting proposals put forward, especially in the light of another little piece of the news that's happened over the past three or four weeks. The Republican majority in the U.S. House of Representatives has eroded due to resignations and people, Congress people leaving the House of Representatives before their terms are finished, to where the Republican majority in the House is down to a single seat. And that makes governing almost impossible for Speaker McCarthy. And what that's led to is that he has been required to reach across the aisle for assistance from the Democrats, which, you know, while a good thing, we want to see bipartisan action in our bodies of government, whether it's state, local, or national. The problem is that the aforementioned, you know, ultra-conservative wing doesn't want to work with Democrats. They follow the wishes of former President Trump, and clearly he does not want them to enter into these bipartisan deals with the Democrats. However, in order to get something done, it is necessary. They have to do this. They don't have enough of a majority to carry measures through on a party line vote exclusively. That's been part of the problem since this Congress was constituted a year and a half ago. I think I mentioned this in the last podcast I did. In a normal year, on average, since the founding of the House of Representatives, on average, they pass 600 to 800 bills a year. The 118th Congress, the one we're in right now, to date, has passed less than 70 bills. Less than 70. So they have not gotten much of anything done, and very few things of major consequence. As a result, the funding of the government was delayed by nearly 5 months. Aid to Ukraine has been a subject of controversy and debate since the start of this Congress. There has just been so much dysfunction and, name calling and trolling and all of this, that it really should be that the American people should be thoroughly disgusted with the conduct of our House of Representatives. Now, I say that because I also include Democrats have a piece of that as well, because the Democrats have appeared to take a let's sit back, have some popcorn, and watch the Republican Party implode, rather than stepping up, even though they're the quote minority party in the House, and exercising and demonstrating leadership, showing the American people that, this is what we need to get done. They need to be talking about that. They need to be out on the trail with their constituents on break, like they are this week, and talking about how nothing is getting done. Here's the Democratic vision of what we want to get done, and were we the majority party, these are the kinds of things we would get done. Give you an example. When I say, the Republican House is being manipulated and the puppet strings are being controlled by the former president, the Democrats in the Senate, and you may have heard of this, the Democrats in the Senate put forward an aid bill for Ukraine and Israel and, Gaza and so forth. They also had a package in there that would have provided for the strictest border controls upgrades ever put forward, that took a lot of the talking points that Republicans have been hounding on for the last 20 years and brought that forward as a bill, handed it to the House. They passed it, handed it to the House, and the House was looking at it and was looking like they were going to pass it. What happens? The Republican, presumptive Republican nominee, one Donald J. Trump, contacted the Speaker of the House and said, "Don't bring this to the floor because I want to run on this as a campaign issue." So rather than take the steps proposed by the Democrats, using their own language for crap's sake, and do something to strengthen our southern border, to improve immigration control, to add additional resources for Border Patrol, for customs enforcement, for processing asylum cases, to reduce the wait time, which now is somewhere in the neighborhood of 2 years, down to a more reasonable level of, say, 6 months. And Donald Trump said, no, I want to be able to campaign on this against Joe Biden. So the Republicans shut that down. This is what our political parties have become. This is what particularly the Republican Party. But by not bringing this forward, talking about it to the American people every doggone day, the Democrats are showing levels of complicity in allowing this process to continue that should turn the stomach of every American voter out there, regardless of which party you're in. So, we have, as I've said many times on this program, we have work to do. We need to be looking at the candidates that are running for re-election. We need to be analyzing their positions. We need to be looking at their voting record, as few bills as there have been. And we need to be questioning them through phone calls, emails, website, text, whatever, on why they are allowing this situation to continue. The idea, and I've heard some wacky justifications for withholding aid to Ukraine, most of which play right into the hands of Vladimir Putin and the Russians, and also demonstrate very clearly to Xi Jinping in China, to Kim Jong-un in North Korea, to Viktor Orban in Turkey, that the American system is behaving like a rudderless ship. We don't have a direction that we're going in, or we haven't had a direction that we are going in. This cannot be allowed to stand. So, we're going to keep on this. I know I've talked about it on many episodes of this show, and I'm going to continue to talk about it. You need to get out and mobilize and vote and contact your representatives. Talk to your state representatives. We'll talk about some things going on in the states after the break, but we need to be making sure that we are holding our political leaders, our politicians, accountable and responsible for all of this chaos that's been going on for the last, 5-6 years, and let them know that, this has got to stop. Because one thing you need to understand, and we're going to talk about this in a future podcast. I'm putting together some research and some notes on it. You need to understand something. If Donald Trump loses the election, that doesn't mean that's the end of MAGAism. That is now part of, it is now baked into the political cake of this country. We are going to have to, go deep into our political leadership, and we're going to have to vote out these ultra-conservative MAGA right-wing people and replace them with people who are more like the traditional Republican Party. So we're going to talk about that. This is going to become a subject of this podcast going forward as we work our way toward Election Day. So strap in. If you have, if you've done research and you have questions on it, write them down and send them to the show in the form of an email. The email address, as always, is firedupradio@yahoo.com. Send me your questions, your comments, your thoughts about where our political leadership needs to go. Federal level, state level, local level. What do we need to be doing in order to bring our country back to a more universally caring country, and remove all this radical chaos that we've seen over the past few years. So again, the email address is firedupradio@yahoo.com. Please send me your thoughts, your concerns, your questions, and I will get answers for you. I will integrate them into the podcast, and we'll discuss them in future episodes. So yeah, I'd love to hear from you. Please reach out. Last point for this segment, we've already talked about, where it seems that Congress is going, most notably and most scary, is the discussions that are going on around the Comstock Act, which in a nutshell and in a very brief description, basically, among some other things, the one thing it does is it prohibits using the postal services, the U.S. Mail, UPS, FedEx, DHL, all of those, to send anything that could be used as a either as a mechanism for abortion or as a mechanism for pregnancy care and so forth. So what does this mean? Really simply, if this law is brought back, and keep in mind, this law is 164 years old, okay? If this law was brought back, your pharmacist would not be able to receive medical contraception pills, medical abortion pills. They could not receive things that would interfere with the process, such as condoms, IUDs, other things like that that prevent pregnancy. And none of those would be able to be shipped by mail, post, UPS, or even, express delivery services. So, the idea is that the conservative side is looking at ways to severely restrict access to women's reproductive care, to medicines and materials that would be used to terminate a pregnancy, even if it is something that's medically necessary. So there's a lot of work to do. If you don't know about the Comstock law, look it up in the search engine of your choice. If you have, wives, mothers, daughters, aunts, female cousins, granddaughters, check into it. Look at what the future of women in this country would look like if this set of laws was rejuvenated, brought back to active status. It's on the books. It's still a law on the books. It's not enforced. But if enforcement of this is turned on, the access of women to reproductive and other related health care is going to be severely restricted. So this is something, and we will, we will come back and visit this as well in future episodes. So let's take our break right here. When we come back, we're going to change direction a little bit, talk about something that we've talked about a lot on this show. The fact that there are still disenfranchised and voting restriction measures being put forward in many states in this country. You're listening to the Fired Up podcast right here on WJMS Media. We'll be right back after the break.
I always had to be so good, no one could ignore me. Carve my path with data and drive. But some people only see who I am on paper. The paper ceiling, the limitations from degree screens to stereotypes that are holding back over 70 million stars. Workers skilled through alternative routes rather than a bachelor's degree. It's time for skills to speak for themselves. Find resources for breaking through barriers at tearthepaperceiling.org. Brought to you by Opportunity at Work and the Ad Council.
And we're back. We're back with Fired Up right here on WJMS Media. And as promised, we want to get into the ongoing battle that is occurring to restrict access to the polls by many, primarily poor and people of color and Democratic voters in at least 13 states, as well as other areas of the country. And one of the ways that that's going on is something that you've probably never heard of. There's a nonprofit organization called the Electronic Registration Information Center, or ERIC, which helps states run their elections more efficiently by maintaining updated voter rolls. And in 2022, 31 states and the District of Columbia were members of the collective. Nearly a third of those states have left or made moves to leave, many of them citing debunked conspiracy theories, claiming that ERIC is run by left-wing activists. Former President Donald Trump attacked ERIC falsely as, quote, pumping the rolls for Democrats and doing nothing to clean them up, close quote. As the 2024 election gets closer, many of these states have no replacement plans. And this is based on an article from CNN titled Opinion, We're Already Seeing More Creative Efforts to Make It Harder to Vote This Year. The article is based on an interview and information from Andrea Haley, who is the CEO of Vote.org, a nonpartisan voter registration and get out the vote organization. And you know, CNN cites this based on her opinions, not necessarily opinions of CNN. Just want to put that into the record. So one of the things as the article continues, and it says, hot on the heels of these 31 states pulling out of ERIC, several anti-voter, anti-democracy individuals have launched an organization called Eagle AI Network, which claims that it's using AI as well as individual visual comparison of assimilated record data to, quote, scrape existing data sources to raise questions about individual voter eligibility. According to information that was collected by the Guardian news organization, based on documents they obtained through a public records request. For example, one man in Cobb County, Georgia, filed at least 176 challenges since December of 2023 using a template that's similar to the one available in Eagle AI. These challenges have resulted in many removals from county voter rolls, and that's according to the County Election Board. This past December, Georgia's Columbia County voted to beta test the software even after the chairman of the state election board, William S. Duffy Jr., sent a letter warning that Eagle AI may violate state privacy laws and election statutes. So I don't have to tell you that we are living in an age now where more and more we see artificial intelligence, or AI, permeating just about every facet of daily life for people here in America and around the world, quite frankly. But, you know, this version is particularly troublesome, as according to a document from its creator, someone named Dr. John Richards, Eagle AI purportedly uses multi-tiered algorithms and matching AI to search for information on the internet that could disqualify a voter's registration. But, according to the article, rather than only using official records or documentation, Eagle AI's creators claims that it goes as far as to crawl public websites for obituaries and even change of address forms that one might file when going on a long vacation, for example. As the Brennan Center warns, quote, investigators, close quote, can also use social media sites to find if users have posted outside of their home state where they're registered. Then, according to Richards, the system can start the process of auto-filing challenge forms against voters. So, translating that into, you know, more standard English, basically this program goes out and looks up references that it can find on the internet based on, you know, your activities, your travel, and other elements that show you being away from where you are registered in your home state to vote. So this is, you know, troubling, and even the article cites raises many red flags. Voters could simply be visiting another state. Two or more voters could simply share the same name, or voters could already be making changes to their registration that haven't been reflected across every instance of their online footprint. It cites, after a voter is flagged, they could have paperwork filed against them, challenging their eligibility, and be turned away from the polls, or even find themselves not listed on the voter rolls on election day. Notably, a local PBS station, WABE, reports that Georgia has been inundated with thousands of challenges filed against individual voters' eligibility since 2021, though the vast majority of these challenges have been dismissed due to lack of evidence. However, a successfully challenged voter would have no idea that this even happened to them until they attempted to exercise their vote. So, as the article cites, on top of the many other instances and mechanisms that several states are using now to, as they say, quote, purge their voter rolls, which actually is removing voters primarily and in some cases particularly Democratic voters or voters not likely to vote for conservative or Republican candidates, this program, rather than using the meticulous and time-consuming process of having humans review the voter rolls, compare them with available documents, and then work through the process of removing someone who may legitimately be removed from the rolls, but more likely may just be one of those individuals that falls into the categories I mentioned above. So, you know, let's say you go on an extended vacation to Europe to visit family and friends or to travel. You're away. You're posting to the internet from wherever it is in the globe that you've landed. Eagle AI will find these and report you as being no longer at your original registration location and thereby automatically trigger a voter removal process to be instituted against you. In a human-based model, you know, there could be questions raised or, you know, something could trigger someone to look at that role and figure out that, oh, this person hasn't moved. They're just over in Spain, you know, visiting family on an extended holiday. So, you know, they shouldn't be removed from the rolls. And, you know, while, as I just said and cited in the article, many of these, you know, for example, in Georgia, were overturned because of lack of corroborating documents, the sheer fact is that the AI algorithm isn't just producing, you know, one or 10 or 20 or 50. It's producing thousands of these across the footprint of states where it's being implemented. increasing the likelihood that, you know, many hundreds or even thousands of voters would be removed from the rolls and be unaware of this removal until election day, when they go to vote and their voter record either doesn't exist or is flagged as challenged. So, you know, it really raises concerns, as do, you know, many applications of AI that we find springing up all over, you know, the country and the world. You know, according to the article, the way it is being applied and the results of its application kind of point to the focus of Eagle AI not to be an election integrity, but systematic voter disenfranchisement, as the Brennan Center reported it. It's an attack on voters. You know, it's clear that artificial intelligence is, as I said, is permeating and being built into more and more elements of our existence. However, more of a thing doesn't necessarily make it a good thing. One of the things, for example, that we talk about on this program on a regular basis is periodically reviewing your voter status, particularly as, you know, you get closer and closer and closer to an election in your area or in your state or nationally. I preach this all the time. Check your voter registration at least monthly, particularly as we get closer and closer to election days, just to make sure that your voter registration is valid and intact, so that when you show up to the polls, your vote can actually go through and be counted. So, you know, one of the things we have to consider as we defend our democracy is anchoring what we do, you know, to maintaining the electorate or expanding the electorate, not shrinking it. And the article cites in 2020, 2/3 of eligible voters cast a ballot. In 2022, that number dropped to 46%. These are relatively high rates, but show the gap in eligibility versus turnout. The recommendations that come out of the article are ones we've also talked about here, that there should be a process in place to simplify voting, to bring more people into the process, not targeting those who are exercising their rights. You know, and, you know, we've got to make sure that we're keeping our eye on what processes are being used in the national arena, the state arena, and particularly the local arena. One of the things we've also talked about here on this program, and one of the things to keep in mind out there, is that much of the political energy and much of the political change that happens in this country doesn't initiate at the national level. It comes from the state level. Your state level elected officials, whether they are you know, state legislatures, the governors, even in some instances local elections, generate you know, elements and laws and rules that percolate upward and make their way to the national stage. For example, if you look at the Supreme Court, the law that overturned Roe versus Wade, the Dobbs decision, started out as a local lawsuit brought in a locality that was litigated and challenged and made its way through the court system, ultimately landing at the Supreme Court, which, you know, as we all know, led to the Supreme Court upholding the Dobbs decision, which, you know, shut down the Roe v. Wade decision. And there are many more examples of this. One of the things, as I've said, check your voter registration, do it regularly, and make sure that you are properly listed, that everything checks out, your name is spelled correctly, it matches your identification, and that you have everything in place on election day when you go to vote. So we will keep following these plans and strategies to impact, voter integrity, the integrity of the voting rolls, and these efforts by many to disenfranchise or otherwise impede, the ability of rank and file Americans to cast their ballot. The bottom line is this, my friends. We need to make sure individually, each of us need to make sure that our vote is properly registered and that it is properly counted. And then we need to make sure that we are getting ourselves to the polls on election day. Now, obviously we've got, the huge election coming up in November for president and other offices on the down ballot. But there are elections in your local area, whether it's your city or town, county or state, that happen throughout the year. So pay attention to the news. Keep track of what elections are coming up. Do your research. Do your homework. Find out if the candidates that are running are candidates that you want. Otherwise, find candidates that think as you think and vote for them. No matter what efforts or plans or actions that are taken to try and restrict your right to vote, it is up to you to make sure that you get to the polls wherever they may be and make sure that your ballot is cast and counted. So that's an ongoing homework assignment. If you've been listening to my show for any length of time, I preach on this quite often. So let's make sure that our votes are getting in and getting counted. Another subject that we've talked about before that came across my radar again, and you've heard me talk about Project 2025, which is a Republican plan for the next Republican president, whether it is Donald Trump or not. This plan is one that has been developed by the Heritage Foundation over a period of years dating back to Ronald Reagan. And it is a plan for Republican revamping, remaking, and controlling the federal government of the United States in a very broad fashion. An article came out that was first reported by the Daily Beast that cites the Heritage Foundation, which is the lead entity behind Project 2025, along with about 80 other organizations working with it, and individuals, I should say. And the article cites that the Democrats are preparing to hang the right-wing Project 2025 agenda around the necks of Republican congressional candidates heading into the election in November. Now, as I briefly mentioned a few moments ago, something you've got to keep in mind as you look at not only Project 2025, but all of the Republican efforts that are going on is that simply this. These processes, these attacks, these attempts to modify and change how we function as a country are not strictly limited to Donald Trump attaining the presidency. They are preparing this for the next Republican administration. Now, you know, that could be, you know, this upcoming election in 2024. It could be 2028. It could be 2032. Either way, this is part of a long-term strategy that has been coming down. So the Heritage Foundation, according to this article, again, originally reported by the Daily Beast, has been plotting a dramatic overhaul of the federal government to accompany, as they put, a second Donald Trump presidency, but you can read that as the next Republican presidency. And they're going to do this by filling civil service jobs with loyalists, restricting access to abortion, and kneecapping the government's ability to address climate change, among other things. Bear in mind, as we talked about in the first half, the Republicans are actively looking at how they can implement the Comstock Act to restrict the availability of a wide range of items, as I was saying, that they consider, quote, immoral, but also that are available to be used for providing abortions. So according to a memo that was obtained by the Daily Beast, House Majority PAC, the Democratic Party's main super PAC for House races, has framed the fight to flip the chamber as a crucial opportunity to reject the Project 2025 agenda, according to the Daily Beast. The PAC did so by outlining where Speaker Mike Johnson and the GOP conference align with key planks of the proposed foundations of a second or an upcoming Republican administration. Project 2025 has proposed using the 19th century Comstock Act, which restricts sending, quote, immoral, close quote, materials through the Postal Service to stop abortion pills from being mailed, which more than half of the House GOP conference, they've signed on to a U.S. Supreme Court brief justifying the use of that law to limit mail distribution of the abortion drug mifepristone. The House Majority memo also, the House Majority PAC memo also cites House Republican support for reinstating the 2020 order that was issued by former President Trump to strip civil service protections and allow his administration to replace career bureaucrats with loyalists. Speaker Johnson promoted legislation back in October of 2020 when he was head of the Republican Study Committee to create a new, quote, Schedule F federal employment category that would make those career bureaucrats easier to fire. And, you know, as a result of these actions and proposals, along with others, the House Majority PAC is pleading with donors to support the group so that they can continue running TV attacks on GOP candidates. Quote, so we have the resources necessary to stop Project 2025, win back the House, and elect Speaker Hakeem Jeffries. So, you know, there is, as we've talked about here, there is an active effort to change the basic way that government in the United States functions. And it is up to us, the voters, to do everything we can to prevent that from happening. Now, you know, the ultra-conservative, MAGA conservatives, whatever you want to call them, are, you know, embedded in the Republican Party. It's not just the few, you know, wackadoodles, you know, like Marjorie Taylor Greene and Matt Gaetz and you know, Comer and Gohsert and so forth. It's not just them. There is a concerted effort to load up the government positions, and that's national, state, and local, with people who are sympathetic to the ultra-conservative point of view, aka the MAGA point of view. So we need to make sure that we are paying attention to this, that we are, you know, actively, as I just said a few minutes ago, registering to vote, exercising that vote, getting, you know, our friends, family, neighbors, who also are opposed to these proposals, make sure we get them to the polls as well. The election coming at the end of this year is very, very controversial and critical to what the future of this country is going to look like. So let's make sure that we're getting out there, that we're getting the job done, that we're talking to, you know, our circle and encouraging them to get out to vote. If you want more information on Project 2025, you can look it up in the search engine of your choice. Now, the full document is a hefty read. It's something like 900 pages. But there are more than a few detailed summaries of the project out there that you can read so that you get educated as to what this plan is, how it would work, and how it would impact you. So, you know, third homework assignment coming out of this episode, my good people, is, you know, do your diligence, do your study, you know, get your information from multiple sources, not just one side of the aisle or other. Let's make sure that we are well prepared to address this issue. And lastly, as I wrap up the recording of this episode, something came across out of the trial going on in New York, the election interference trial against Donald Trump. And simply it was this: David Pecker, the former owner and publisher of the National Enquirer tabloid newspaper, was on the stand for his second day. And among the things that he was questioned about was the details of the so-called catch-and-kill process by which news stories that were not favorable to Donald Trump were purchased and then buried, never to be published. But he also said a few things that were very interesting. One of the things that came out of the testimony was that Donald Trump and Michael Cohen and David Pecker were actively working on a method of, you know, giving good press to Donald Trump and attacking his political enemies, you know, by publishing stories that either weren't true or embellishing existing stories to, you know, make the people distasteful to the voting public. Quickly, they cited Texas Senator Ted Cruz, and there are, if you search the National Enquirer's database, you can find, many headlines about Senator Cruz, and at least five of them, according to the testimony, were 100% fake and dealt with, alleged affairs that the senator had. The questioning really brought out that the three individuals were actively producing fake news. Now, how many times have we heard the Republicans in general and Donald Trump in particular talk about, fake news? And apparently, according to, what came out of the trial, they were actively producing and pursuing the creation of fake news to provide to the American people. So, it's just another case of, listening to what the Republicans are saying, doing the research and finding out whether or not stories that they are telling us are or have basis in fact. So, you know, just a little tidbit of what's coming out of the trial. The transcripts are available. You can go to newyorkcourts.gov, and that website again is newyorkcourts.gov, one word, and click on the tab marked cases, and you will see the listing of the transcripts, the daily transcripts from the Trump trial, which are being posted there. So you can keep up with what's going on since the trial is not being broadcast on radio, television, or on the internet. You can read the transcripts of each day's proceedings and, you know, find out for yourself what's going on, the information and evidence that's being prevented, the arguments and cross-examination, everything is listed there. It's a highly interesting read. I do urge that you access it and, you know, read it for yourself so that you know what's going on. And that's going to wrap for this edition of Fired Up. Again, I apologize for the erratic schedule of publishing these podcasts, but as my day job work settles into a routine, I will get back onto a regular publishing schedule. In the meantime, keep checking the WJMS website for the latest issues of the Fired Up podcast. Thank you all, as always, for listening. I greatly appreciate it. Stay safe, and I look forward to bringing more information and insight to you as we talk more in 7 days.